All right, so we're going to be talking gender.
Yes, we are talking gender today. And the funny thing is, well, you know, we both of us, you know, in our choices chose, you know, people who were designated women at birth for, you know, our selections. We don't have any, there aren't any designated men in here. Now, Ma Rainey I chose because of the androgynous nature of her, you know, presentation that, you know, allowed her to, like, you know, cross between worlds and penetrate into the male-dominated area of music to a certain extent.
Yep. And didn't Ma Rainey come out then and as she did. Being interested in women?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Well, she got and she was arrested. She was arrested and caught with holding, like, you know, an orgy or something at her house or whatever. And she was caught with women at the orgy. And I think that was, like, you know, where, you know, she was outed. But yeah, like, I mean, the song that I chose, and, you know, we can go into it, but the song that I chose, you know what? I'm going to go into it now.
Let's do it.
I'm going to talk about it now. Let's do this now.
The audacity of this pitch. The audacity of this pitch has been brought to you by Diversify IT.
That's a perfect starting point because it's funny you brought up, I thought about a couple men, but you and I have chatted offline. Mm-hmm. This is somewhat of an aside. I thought last episode, which is only our second and third, I was not on my A game. So I was like, all right. And that last episode, I talked about redemption, a redemption song for Casey Anderson. Mm-hmm. This is like my redemption episode, and it is literally the hardest topic for me. So,
facts.
Like, when I was sitting there, like, I can't choose a male singer for
that's what I felt too. That's what I was trying to get to. That's what I felt too. I was like, if we pick guys for this, we're going to look like complete assholes. Right. I need to make sure I'm giving some representation to a viewpoint that's not my own.
Exactly.
And to to your credit, like, and that harkens back to the last episode. You know, the energy was different because right. We had LaShonda and Laura here, and, like, we've developed a rapport, and then whenever you integrate anybody new into the circle, it's almost like, okay, so, like, what do we say?
Right. I felt like I was on the spot and, exactly. Like, feeling like I had to entertain. Because, real funny, because, you know, LaShonda had said somewhere offline after the first episode, or episode 000, she's like, I could listen to your voice all day. So I'm sitting there talking, I'm like, am I sounding the way that I want her to? And then she had this, like, really great point. Twice she had really good points. And I was like, damn, she's outdoing me. <It's>
like, you're gonna upstage me on my own mic? This is our show.
I am gonna try my damnedest to do a little bit better on this one. So yeah, let's go back to Ma Rainey.
It was good. So the first thing was like you said, like I saw not only the characterization of her sexuality in her career and how she was portrayed or basically, like, you know, judged by that, but I was focusing on her lyricology. Is that a word?
Sounds like one.
Yeah, it's going to be a word now. But basically, like, how she wrote her songs, and she actually wrote them in such a way, or some of them in such a way, where that androgyny actually came out. And so not only was she this staple figure, you know, the mother, they call her the mother of the blues and whatnot. Not only was she that, she was also a prime advocate for representation when it comes to gender and, you know, and sexuality. Yep. And so as I was going through that examination of her history, first I was like, okay, well, you know, what song do I pick out, you know, that I want to cover? And then I found, you know, CeCe Ryder. And there's all these interpretations. It's after her sexuality. I mean, well, it presents as this song about, you know, this woman who fell in love with this man. Well, you this is what you're led to believe. This woman fell in love with this man. And then, you know, whenever his other woman came back. You know, apparently she was misled to fall in love with him. And when this other woman came back, you know, suddenly she, you know, realized that, you know, she was never going to be with him and you know, decided that she was going to leave. And then there was, like, at the very, very end, this statement about, you know, I'm going to return with a gun and kill the guy. So I was looking at that song and then looking at the examination or the history of it through this new lens, placing her sexuality in the context, you know, with that song. So now it's like this search for, like, hidden messages within the song that exists. And the sad thing is you can't necessarily, like, you know, state, you know, this is what Ma Rainey meant, because she's not around, you know, to say it. So there could be a lot of speculation, you know, about, you know, what the true intention of the song is. But the interpretation was that, you know, this wasn't a song about, you know, a man, but a song about a woman who had a man return that, you know, replaced her or them, where them being Ma Rainey as the lover, the jilted lover, who was being replaced by the husband or the boyfriend or whatever. I digress. My issue came whenever, as I'm going through the lyrics, I'm seeing Elvis Presley, Elvis Presley, Elvis Presley this, Elvis, and not only are the searches for CeCe Ryder leading to Elvis Presley, the lyrics to CeCe Ryder are leading to Elvis Presley, and the lyrics are now switched because it's Elvis talking about, you know, a woman. And this becomes a staple. This is like a staple song. This is like one of the songs that he performed in his Aloha Hawaii tour and everything. And whenever you hear that fanfare that starts, dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun, that's Ma Rainey. That's Ma Rainey.
I said, CeCe Ryder, oh, CeCe, what you have done. I said, CeCe Ryder, oh, CeCe, what you have done. My girl, you made me love you. Now your loving man has gone. Yeah, what I say. Well, I'm going away, baby, and I won't be back till fall. And I'm going away, baby.
And so. So I'm trying to examine and dig more into Ma Rainey, I'm like, this dude is, like, totally co-opted, you know, this whole woman's essence in any nuance that existed has been, you know, overwritten by this new rendition.
Yeah, wiped away by the masculinity of Elvis Presley.
Exactly, exactly. So not only does she not get the recognition that she deserves, you know, in regard to the history of the blues, I mean, like, you know, that's what I was thinking to myself. I was like, you know what? There need to be, like, Ma Rainey impersonators all over Las Vegas. That should be the Ma Rainey, you know, strip. I was like, there should be Ma Rainey cosplayers, like, you know, going out there and, like, you know, antagonizing Elvis cosplayers. But yeah, it's like she doesn't get the, not only does she not get the recognition in that respect, historically, she also has her whole narrative or the subtext within the song itself co-opted by, you know, this rewritten, you know, history.
Yeah, so that story's not new, unfortunately, of white artists, mm-hmm. probably, mm-hmm. You know, this one's particularly a male artist stealing the mojo or, you know, the spirit of what Ma Rainey is singing about. What fascinates me is some of the stuff that Ma Rainey was able to get away with back in the day. Like, even you talked about, you know, talking about grabbing a gun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So immediately made me think about, I guess they're now called the Chicks, you know, Goodbye Earl.
Mm-hmm.
So when that song came out and they killed the dude,
mm-hmm.
that was actually pretty damn controversial, and that's in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking, what, 7 decades previously, which is Ma Rainey's 30s, 40s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I should know my history better. Also getting away with a decent amount of songs about, I believe, drugs and mm-hmm. getting, you know, alcohol, which is fine. I mean, those were certainly sung under. But all the stuff that – all the groundbreaking that she did, it is, you know, stunningly sad that she's not more – I mean, people, of course, know her name. But mm-hmm. like you said, she's no Elvis Presley in the history or how she's seen culturally. Not that she wasn't far more important. I'm not saying that.
No. I totally hear you. Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting that you mentioned the Dixie Chicks, because I have a confession, Chris. I have a confession. This is rooted in the trauma of my past. And as I've grown, I've matured, and I recognize that it's not necessarily connected. My admission. I hated country music. I grew up hating country music. And I grew up hating country music because I was born and raised, you know, in Topeka, Kansas, in the Midwest. So it was like all, you know, I heard like all the time around me. And the funny thing was, you had stuff like, you know, Woody Guthrie that was out there. But I never heard Woody Guthrie, or at least Woody Guthrie was not presented in the same way other artists of the time you know, were. Yeah, I was never presented country music through a gender lens, through a political lens. It was always about, like, you know, pickup trucks, dogs left me for my wife, beer, everything. And so, like, I had, like, this really, and then Elvis, yeah. Elvis was there, too. And so I was like, I don't see myself in any of this music. You know, this music is, there are bigots around me, you know, and this is their soundtrack. I am not a fan. I'm not a fan at all. But then the Dixie Chicks came out, and I was like, I might mess with country music. This is pretty good. And then I saw what happened whenever the Dixie Chicks, you know, came after Bush.
Yep.
And I saw basically how everybody around me who was, they were, I mean, like, for the first time, I felt like I had some sort of camaraderie, you know, with the people around me. Because I'm like, yeah, I like Dixie Chicks. Yeah, you like Dixie Chicks. Then everybody hated Dixie Chicks. And I'm like, what did they do? Like, did they lie? Like, what? Nope. Why are you upset about it? And that was the first time I saw the intersection outside of, like, you know, soul and Aretha Franklin. We'll talk about that later on. But I saw the intersection of politics and music and how, you know, how the two interplayed with one another. But yeah, that was my admission. You know, I hated country music. And then but you came with, you know, two country songs, and I'm like, and I had the same feeling that I felt whenever I heard Dixie Chicks. I was like, I could mess with this. These were not songs that I heard, like The Pill. I'll let you talk about that one.
Strap yourself in, because I am going to talk about two more country songs.
Let's go. I'm ready now.
And you set me up perfectly. I don't know if you did it on purpose, but that intersection between politics and also expectations. Like, mm-hmm. country music has always had these expectations of their artists, what was acceptable and what wasn't. The Dixie Chicks clearly crossed whatever line that is. I was the same way with you. Like I grew up going to my grandparents' house every Sunday, Saturday or Sunday, I don't remember now, but and everything would stop when Hee Haw came on. And they'd watch Hee Haw. And I'd be sitting there going, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this. So I hated country music. But then when I went on to graduate school looking for something to write about, I'm like, yeah, I know country music. So I started writing about the history of country music and never quite finished it, which is why maybe some of my country or some of my history might be a little off here. But I did choose the song The Pill by Loretta Lynn, released in 1975. I'll do a quick read of one of the segments that works for me. All these years I've stayed at home while you had all your fun, and every year that's gone by, another baby's come. There's gonna be some changes made right here on Nursery Hill. You've set this chicken your last time, because now I've got the pill.
All these years I've stayed at home while you had all your fun, and every year that's gone by, another baby's come. There's gonna be some changes made right here on Nursery Hill. You've set this chicken your last time, because now I've got the pill.
So this song was extremely controversial in 1975. It was banned from country radio. At various times, Loretta Lynn had, I think, as many as 14 songs that were banned. So, you know, nowadays we think of her as the coal miner's daughter. We've seen that movie. Very strong woman, obviously. And she made some waves. And, you know, thinking back to Ma Rainey and what she was fighting against in the 30s and 40s, and Loretta Lynn is still very much fighting against in the 1970s. So some of her counterparts, like Tammy Wynette singing Stand By Your Man and being very openly anti-feminist, both in her music and in her politics. I believe she even supported, God, Brandon, you're going to kill me, dude. I can't. George Wallace.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. I did not know that. Yeah. That changes my perspective a little bit, but yeah, no.
Yeah. So you got a counterpart like Tammy Wynette, who was very openly anti-feminist, recording such songs as, you know, Stand By Your Man. I did listen to a great podcast, really long one, but really, really high quality, called Cocaine and Rhinestones. And he focuses on George Jones and Tammy Wynette in season two. And Billy Sherrill's a big part of that. He was a huge record producer in country music at that time period. And they really played up this image of Tammy Wynette and, you know, very anti-feminist, you know, that sort of runs through country music. So for Loretta Lynn to record a song like this and make a stand such as this is actually a big deal that we sometimes take for granted these days. And it ultimately will lead to my second song. And this, we talked about it last week. I believe that was it Pussy Riot and their song? That sort of bubblegum sound with the very subversive lyrics going on. So my second song, and then I'll throw it back your way because I'd like to end with yours, is by someone who's sort of seen as a follower of Loretta Lynn. Her name is Margot Price, and she recorded a song called Pay Gap. And many of her songs are, I would say that she wears her liberalism and on her sleeve, and but I think some of the, you know, very, very in your face words, if when I read this to you, but then when you actually play behind me, what the singing sounds like with her relatively sweet voice and, you know, pretty innocuous sounding music, it's not that I'm asking for more than I'm owed, and I don't think I'm better than you. They say that we live in the land of the free, but sometimes that bell don't ring true. It's been that way with no equal pay, and I want to know when I will be fixed. Women do work and get treated like slaves since 1776.
It's not that I'm asking for more than I'm owed, and I don't think I'm better.
lot of talk about gender gap, not asking for more than she deserved. And apparently this song was written after recording some music and not being paid the same amount as some male artists. And, you know, this is coming up in sports, in music, all over. And, you know, we're in 2022 and still having, you know, this song was released in 2017, I think. So very, very recent. You know, so what do we do about that? What are, you know...
My dude, it's the fascinating thing. I couldn't stop thinking about the overlap between or the juxtaposition of your two songs, because, you know, you had The Pill, where you're talking about, you know, this deliberating of sexuality because of, you know, birth control.
Yep.
And then you have, you know, this pay gap. And right now we're talking about, you know, the loss of Roe versus Wade, yep, and, you know, women's right to bodily autonomy of being under attack. You know, and like you said, none of this stuff has changed as far as the pay gap is concerned. So it's like, where... If we're talking about, you know, women, you know, should be forced to have, you know, children that they don't want, and recognizing how much of a financial responsibility, you know, children happen to be, you are adding insult to an injury that has not been rectified and talked about, you know, for generations, right, as exemplified by this music. And so that I thought that was a testament to the galvanizing power of music and our ability to, you know, and its ability to be a time capsule that we can reference, you know, as we're moving forward. So as people are saying, you know, everything's fine now, everything's equitable, everything's fair. It's like, no, you know, these right. people were singing about this yep. way back then.
Yeah. And it's, you'd like to think that history continues to be a progression, you know, moving forward. Mm-hmm. And way back when Ma Rainey's talking about sexual freedom, 2022, you know, women have lost rights in that regard. You know, however long, you know, back to how much control women may or may not have had in the studio,
yeah,
you know, when Loretta Lynn is recording. And I don't think a lot of artists had control back then, but what songs they could and couldn't record. It was more to fit the stereotypes in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's... Even like 2017, and Margo Price is still recording controversial songs, you know, and others are too. That's one of, I guess, the great things is I, you know, will admit that I don't listen to a lot of women. I think we talked about this on the last episode. It's more you try to envision people that you could actually be, because, you know,
yeah,
I can't seem to save my life.
Yourself?
Right?
Yeah, where do you see yourself in the art? Yeah,
but when I come across, you know, women like Margo Price, and I'd had listened to her music before we started this, and others like Jenny Lewis, who was in a band called Rilo Kiley, stuff like that. You know, she records in the nude. It's just like she's she's out there, and some of her songs are, you know, very sexually in your face.
Right.
You know, it's just taking control of that, because men have always been able to sing about sex.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You think
yeah.
about some of the, you know. Back in the day, it's not even a hint of what they're actually talking about. Yeah. It's, you know,
this is what we're going to do. I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to take you down to the river. We're going to do some things. Insert sexual euphemism metaphor here.
Right. I'll have some, you know, slightly ambiguous song title that you can't figure out. unless you actually think about it for 2 seconds. But if women do that, you know, they're often seen in a very different light.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those are the types of artists that I seek out. And, you know, it is very discouraging to, you know, she's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you know, not a lot has changed. I mean, of course, women can vote. And, you know, we have executive female executives. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, it's. But, you know, how much has really changed in 1776 when women can lose
their rights
mm-hmm. so easily? Mm-hmm. As we have seen over the past year.
Yep. I mean, yeah. I mean, you can, if you're a CEO in a red state, you have your bodily autonomy, you know, under attack, just like,
yep.
you know, someone working, you know, a blue collar job,
right.
you know, in the trenches. And so, yeah, I mean, like it's definitely a testament to how the patriarchy, despite advances, despite influences, you know, in rights for women, continues to suppress, continues to control, because, you know, the people who are passing these laws don't even have, you know, their bodies regulated in such a way, obviously, being men. And so, yeah, I mean, speaking of that, I mean, that's a good way to segue to, you know, the natural woman, the hallmark song of femininity, soul song of femininity by Aretha Franklin. And so it wasn't so much, well, the history of this song is kind of, is kind of interesting, because Aretha wrote this song at the request of a man who was reflecting on his past. Let me pull it up. Jerry Wexler, the co-owner and producer of Atlantic Records, where she was signed, had made a song called Natural Man. And so he told Aretha that he wanted her to make a song called Natural Woman. And so she recorded the song, and it wasn't an instant hit. It didn't become a hit until 56 years.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. And when I knew I had to face another day,
and so that was interesting to me. But then as I was researching that, there was this recently released news report that basically detailed how the FBI was profiling her. And I was like, that's interesting. I was like, you know, like, what was so, well, first of all, she was a hub in regard to, you know, just the culture of the civil rights movement. Right. And so back then, you know, concerts, events, like there were a lot of singers who were more politically active. And so meetings, you know, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, she was actually hosting concerts with their aid, with their support. And so because the civil rights movement was such a threat to the status quo, the political establishment at the time, you know, I can see why the interest was there. But then I looked at her age when she was being profiled. She is 26 year old. Nicki Minaj is mid-30s now. I don't think that she's being profiled by the FBI.
Probably not.
And so it was also, you know, kind of an eye opener too, because I'm like, you know, Aretha was 26 years old, being politically active. She actually, you know, had volunteered to donate money to bail Angela Davis, out of jail, and that was one of the things that like put her on, you know, the, you know, supporter of domestic terrorism list of the day. So she's 26 years old doing this, and you know, we've talked about this before, like, where is that messaging now? Like, where we don't see organization like that now, when it comes to civil rights, especially considering that they're under attack. Like, you would think, I mean, we've had some artists come out individually and state, this is bad, this is wrong, or whatever. And I just see this intersection primarily with affecting the bottom line. Like, you're not, like, you know, this fear that by the companies that now own these artists that, you know, if you come out this way or if you say this thing or whatever, you know, we won't be able to get this song in the new, you know, Rugrats movie that's coming out or whatever. That's the only argument I can think of for suppressing it, because, you know, if you look at a lot of artists in regard to their private postings, their timelines and stuff like that or whatnot, you know, they will show some solidarity with the times. And that's the question, too. Like, is it true solidarity or is it solidarity because they know that their audience, you know, is they know that there's a paycheck attached to it. Yeah. Like, you know, if I say I'm for women's rights, it's safe to say that. We can say that. But, you know, we're not going to talk specifically about who to vote for or who the opposition is, who the problem is.
I can't claim to be an expert in this area, but, you know, one of the few artists I can think of, and it's what attracted me to them, that I associated with Black Lives Matter was Run the Jewels.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact that there are others. It's just that I would. But, you know, I guess one of the narratives that we've started to put forward, and maybe we should question this, is, you know, a lot of these artists, at least that I've chosen, aren't very popular. I mean, they're, you know, and it's not necessarily, you know, a direct correlation, but is it the fact that they're willing to be so controversial? Keep mixing those words up. They're willing to be so controversial, have any impact on that? It's like the ones who want to be as free as possible to, you know, express their political views, sometimes limit their audiences. I mean, especially nowadays. I mean, we are as divided of a country as we've ever been.
Yeah.
So it is risky to divide your audience at least in half, if not worse, depending on how controversial you want to get or how direct you want to get in your politics and your music.
Exactly. I mean, and so it's a testament. And so as I was thinking of, I mean, listening to, you know, the two country songs that you submitted, you know, I was thinking about how, like, you know, to make a song about, you know, the pill now would be, you know, wouldn't end your career necessarily. I mean, you could probably sneak it on your track and a B-side, whatever. But the fact is, you would not be controversial. But to make it back then, whenever, like, it is, that's bravery. That's bravery. And I'd like to see more of that, you know, I'd like to see more of that now. But then just like you said, there's a price to pay. Dixie Chicks paid the price. Sinead O'Connor paid the price, you know. Yeah. And so throughout history, we've seen, you know, any time gender advocacy, especially in the case of women and women's rights and women's sexuality, you know, is pushed forward. You know, there's consequences for doing that, and it's weird that people. I guess it's for me, it's strange that it still continues to happen because we recognize that, you know, women feel a certain type of way about judgments being made, you know, about their bodies, you know, on their behalf without their input. Like, that's a running theme. So why would that be so why is that so polarizing now? Like, if I've told you, you know, year after year, don't do this, this is messed up, don't do this, stop it. Like, you know, year 57, you know, it shouldn't be like, oh my God, pearls clutch. Like, they've, how could you say such a thing, you know, in regard to your sexuality, which, you know, I acknowledge exists whenever I want to take advantage of it. But yeah, case in point.
Yeah, and, you know, not to belabor the point, but I just looked, you know, Margot Price has 13,000 followers on YouTube Music, which isn't, you know, insignificant, but compared to someone like Carrie Underwood has 2.5 million. I mean, and I've, you know, and again, there's quality music and all that other stuff, but Margot Price is known for sort of a little bit more in your face politically. And sometimes you're going to, it seems like you are going to pay that price these days.
Yeah, you might get profiled by the FBI.
There you go.
That could happen. But yeah, I mean, that's what we're talking. I mean, that's the essence of what we discuss, you know, in this podcast. And this has been a good show.
Yeah.
But yes, the essence of what we discussed in this podcast is, you know, people who are willing to take that risk, you know, to advocate, you know, for themselves. You know, we talked about, you know, gender, you know, in this show, you know, but there's opportunities in the future. We can focus on, you know, songs that represent, you know, talk about sexuality explicitly. We know Ma Rainey, you know, alluded to it to a certain extent. And then, you know, even with the pill, we're talking about sexuality, but not in regard to, you know, more about, you know, sexual reproductive rights as opposed to sexuality itself. But I think you touched on something that I think is going to be really provocative, no pun intended, for, you know, something for us to cover in the future.
Well, and I apparently set myself up for a challenge because now I got to think, you know, if I think sexual identity might be a natural next mm-hmm. one for us.
Mm-hmm.
I got to think of a country artist that's challenged that. I mean, that's...
Oh, that's going to be... Well, I would look into... You know what? I will take that challenge.
You'll take it, all right.
I'll take that challenge off your hands.
All right. Well, why don't you throw a challenge my way, then?
Because I already know.
Maybe this could be a good way to set it up, is I challenge you...
Sexuality in, because yeah, I know you like hip hop. Sexuality in hip hop.
All right.
But from the non misogynistic, yes. You know where I'm going.
I do.
So yeah. So,
all right.
That's what we'll do.
Challenge accepted. Let's
gotcha.
Do it.
Gotcha. We'll do it. Next time.
Next time. Good one. Thanks, Brandon.
Good. Good too, Chris. Talk to you later.
The audacity of this pitch.
The conversation does not have to stop here. Join us on diversifyit.duke.edu and join our listserv.